Calgary Flames fans, it's time for Flames Unfiltered. Entertaining and controversial hockey talk with your host, Brad Berube.
Wins, losses, COVID, wins, trades, wins, NHL trade deadline. Yeah, it's all behind us, and now it's time to push for the Stanley Cup playoffs. Good evening and welcome to Flames Unfiltered, episode 119. I am the host of the show, Brad Berube. Good to have you with us on a Wednesday evening, and no Flames tonight, no Flames tomorrow night, and there I am. And that's something I want to talk about right away. We have been going through some technical difficulties on the video end, not so much the audio end, but the video end. And I apologize for that. And we had a great interview later on in the show with Nate Thomas where the video is not acceptable for my liking. The audio is good. So we're just going to have a pictures of us up on the screen as we talk. I apologize. The changes are being made. I have a piece of equipment sitting next to me that just arrived today. And I will be installing all new internet stuff tomorrow in my studio and spending the day getting the studio back to where it was originally. But I've been having some video difficulties over the last couple months, and I want to really get those rectified because I do my best to put out a show that that I want to be proud of and that is enjoyable for you guys to not only listen to but watch. And we'll be working on that. Hopefully, I can get those problems rectified tomorrow. I really, really hope. Second thing, thanks to everyone that joined us on the live blog on Monday while we sat back, watched NHL trade deadline, talked about some moves. I fired off my opinions as soon as the moves happened, and there wasn't much for Calgary. But we're going to talk a little bit about that on the show today. It was a quiet day for the Flames, and I expected that, and I think many of the fan base did too. So, highlight of the week this week, it wasn't the games in my mind. It was Daryl Sutter's quotes. And I find myself looking forward to the post-game show and Daryl Sutter's quotes as much as I do the games now. Hell, some nights it's better. This week we got blessed with Sutter being angry after the fact that it took 33 minutes to stitch up Erik Gudbranson. And his quote was, "I could have done it in 5 minutes. I sold horses and cows in 10 minutes." How do you get any better than that? Quote of the year, right? And he followed it up with, he had Elias Lindholm talking to him quite a bit about bringing his cousin Callie Yarncruck into the mix. And he told Lindy that, he told Lindy, "You better be careful. If you think he's that good, he'll be taking your ice time." Another good one. And I loved it on deadline day when asked if deadline day is a distraction for the players. He said, "I don't know. Ask them. Doesn't bother me. I'm not getting traded. I might get fired, but I'm not getting traded." This guy's not only a good coach, but every night it's just... And the funny thing is, I don't even think he's trying to be funny, is he? But he is. He's funny every single night. On the show today, we're going to talk about the three games that took place since we last talked last Wednesday night. And we're going to talk a little bit about the couple of games that we shouldn't really be too proud of in Calgary. Is not so good. A Vancouver game that was really good. And then we'll recap NHL trade deadline, and then a good friend of the show, Nate Thomas, joins us. We're going to talk everything Flames from deadline, Monahan, line combos, Dubé, and yeah, that push to the playoffs that is coming. We'll wrap the show with some Flames news from the Pacific, a listener question, and preview of this weekend's games, which I feel are really, really important. Probably more important than a lot of people think. And I'll tell you why I feel that way. All right, it's time for, to get our Flames hockey talk fix. All right, Flames fans, it's time to recap what happened last week since we last talked. Friday night, March 18th, Buffalo Sabres come to town. Yeah, sounds like an easy night, right? Yeah, not so much. Didn't watch this one live. I went to a junior hockey game. And when I got home, I watched this game. And I was like doing everything in my power to stay awake because this was a sleeper. Nobody scores in regulation. Markstrom with almost the shutout, but he allows an overtime goal on a huge gaffe on his part. And the Flames lose 1-0. I don't think any of the team was happy after the game. Sutter said he was happy to get a point out of a game that they didn't even score a goal, which I agree with him. What a crazy, crazy game that was. A lot of people were on social media saying the Flames took Buffalo lightly. I don't know. Do you take anybody lightly in the NHL? I don't know. I just think it was one of those nights. Hey, it's 82 games, man. We're not going to have, you know, top-notch stellar nights every single night. And it wasn't Calgary's night that night. And I don't know, man. I wasn't pissed after this game. I wasn't happy either, but I don't know. Then Saturday night, the night after, Calgary heads to Vancouver. And I was a little bit wondering what this one was going to be. Last time we were in Vancouver, yeah, ugly, 7-1. Worst game of the year for the Flames, or one of the worst games of the year for the Flames. Calgary jumps right out on Vancouver right away. 3 goals in the first. Absolutely dominates them. Outshoots them 44-25. 3 goals in the first, 1 in the second, 1 in the third. Anderson with a goal and assist, 19-plus minutes in ice time. Tkachuk had a goal, 2 assists. Calgary did everything right. They out-hit them. They outshot them. They were 1-for-2 in the power play. Minimal giveaways. I thought this was a really good night. As a matter of fact, I thought the first period might have been the best period of Flames hockey we saw all year. Rasmus Anderson does get that game-winning goal, and Thatcher Demko loses, and it's always fun to see the Canucks lose, right? And then a couple days off, and San Jose comes to town, and San Jose has been a pain in the Flames' ass all year. 2 losses in previous meetings, and Calgary gets up 2-1 after 1. It's 3-2 after 2, and everything looked good. A 1-goal lead going into the third period, locked down. Yeah, Daryl Sutter hockey, going to get 2 points out of this one. Not so fast. Things just go from bad to worse. Allow 2 goals in the third. One from... Well, the first goal was bad. It was from out, well, about the blue line. Bad. Nobody in front. Just bad. Markstrom did not have a good night. Another shot from behind the end line. And, yeah, just was not Jacob Markstrom's night. It's hard to get pissy with him, though, isn't it? It's really hard to get pissy with him. Because so many nights he bails us out so much that it's hard to get mad. They get outshot by the Sharks 38-31. We allow a team almost 40 shots. That's not good Flames hockey. This game was not good. Sloppy. I thought we came out the first 7 minutes. I thought we were really, really good. And then it went downhill from there. In the first period, you could tell Markstrom was frustrated. One of the Sharks, I can't even remember who it was, knocked the puck into the net after the whistle, which I wish other players would have saw it. Markstrom gave him a slash and then speared him, which I thought today was going to result in some disciplinary action, but I have heard nothing today at the time of recording from anything from NHL player safety, and I kind of kept an eye on it today. Doesn't look like Markstrom's even going to get talked to about it. I thought it was a spear. It was a blatant spear. I don't know. It's my guys, so I'm not going to get too upset. But because I thought the guy had it coming. You don't ever. It's an unwritten rule in hockey. You just don't ever shoot the puck in the net after the whistle. And he did. And Markstrom didn't like it. And I like that fire. It's not the fire we used to see with Smith, where Smith would get psycho and then suck after it and completely lose composure during the game. Markstrom looked cool and composed after the period was over. Came out good in the second. I thought he had a good second period. And then things went haywire in the third. Yeah, not a good game. It's funny because other years, you know, you learn how to lose as a fan base. And, last year we got pretty damn good at it, didn't we? This year we haven't had to suffer through too many losses. And I find myself, when we lose, I'm in a mood, like a funk the next morning. And today I got out of it quickly because I was reading social media, which, God, I should not do. It just gets me aggravated. And I see this fan base ripping this team and, oh, we need to rest so-and-so. And Lindholm was off his game. And, yeah, he was off his game last night. But holy cow, it's one game. It's the only game. Can you name me another game this year that Elias Lindholm wasn't good? No. Relax, everybody. Relax. This team is not going to play at top-notch level all 82 games this year. And we're going to lose hockey games. Now, do we want to lose one-goal leads in the third period? Hell no. And is it okay to be pissed? Yeah, but it's not a panic. Holy cow. We lose one, and I feel like some guys just panic. And it's like, calm down. We're all right. Let's see how we do this weekend. And it creates a little more importance on that. And we'll talk about that here a little bit later on in the show. All right. NHL trade deadline. This last Monday, quiet day for the Flames. But a good day. How many times have we heard, sometimes the best moves on deadline day are no moves? I thought Brad Treliving summed it up really well. As he described it as rush hour traffic. If you leave work at 5, you drive in rush hour traffic, and it gets to be a jumbled mess. If you leave at 2 and you get ahead of it, things tend to go a little bit more smooth. And by bringing in Toffoli a few weeks ago and Yarncroc early in the week, he got out ahead of it. And he got the guys he wanted at a fairly reasonable price. That's good work by our GM. He gets ripped on a lot. He's had a good year. He should be getting praised for signing Zadorov and Gabranson. He's done a lot of good this year. And the Flames got out ahead of it, and they got the guys they want. And this team is a better team for it and a much better team heading into the playoffs. Some bad news on deadline day. On Sunday, the Flames had to put Brad Richardson and his $800,000 contract on waivers. The reason they had to do this is they had to free up cap, so if they could find a depth forward or defenseman, they had some money to do it. Now, they hoped he wouldn't get claimed. Unfortunately, we found out deadline day Monday afternoon that he did get claimed by the Vancouver Canucks. Brad Richardson heads to the Vancouver Canucks. It frees up some cap space, which was utilized but not utilized in a way. But, yeah, I guess it was utilized. But, yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think we lose anything on the ice by losing Brad Richardson. Maybe some face-off things. But what I think we lose is that experience. He's always been one of the Sutter guys. And that sucks to lose that in the locker room. I think from what I've heard, he's well-liked and that experience goes a long way in the locker room. Thank goodness we have a lot of guys with that experience. I'm not too worried about it on that end. But unfortunate that Brad Richardson time in Calgary was so short. The Flames, what did they do? Late in the day, right at deadline, right before it ends, the Flames did acquire Ryan Carpenter from the Chicago Blackhawks in exchange for a 2024 fifth-round pick. Ryan Carpenter, a 31-year-old center who can also play the right wing, $1 million contract, a pending UFA at the end of the year. His time in Chicago has been the last 3 years. This year in 59 games, 3 goals, 8 assists, 11 points. This guy's not going to light it up on the scoreboard, but this guy's good in the faceoff circle and was a key player in Chicago's penalty kill as he led the Chicago Blackhawks in shorthanded minutes. And I thought about this a little bit. I don't know how much ice time that Carpenter is going to get. I would expect not very much. But if there's an injury, this guy can come in. And you know what else he can do? He can maybe take some of the penalty kill time off of Elias Lindholm. Those are tough minutes. Penalty kill minutes are tough, tough minutes. And do we want our number one center, the guy we're going to rely on down the stretch here for some strong offense, and especially in the playoffs, having to kill those tough, tough, difficult penalty kill minutes? Maybe Carpenter can ease that. And that would be worth it right there. Right? That would be worth it. Now, Carpenter was a part of the Vegas Golden Knights Cup run, so he has experience getting into the finals. Yeah. Everybody talked about us going out and getting a depth D-man, and I think they did. I think they tried. But the price tags, and I was watching the price tags early in the morning, and I'm like, wow, that's a lot of picks to be given up for him. That's a lot of picks. We didn't have those picks to give up. And we also didn't want to touch a lot of roster, touch any key roster players. And I think that's a smart move. There is no sense in overpaying when we don't have to. And you look at this roster and you look at how this roster is built. That is why we brought in Michael Stone. That is why we signed Connor Mackey. You look, we have Connor Mackey, Michael Stone, who's an amazing guy, take 26 days off, steps in, looks like he hasn't missed a beat. And then you have Yusuf Välimäki. We have 9. Daryl Sutter always said he wants 10. And or not Daryl Sutter, Brian Burke used to always throw out the playoff 10 defenseman. And I probably agree with him. We're one short. You look around the league, most teams are way more than one short on the back end of true NHL quality defensemen. They did get a last minute late move in as they sent Michael McNevin, goaltender they just acquired earlier in the week from the Montreal Canadiens for future considerations. They sent it to Ottawa for future considerations. I don't understand. You get here, out the door, future considerations here, future what? Future ever considerations ever get called back on? I don't know. That's a topic for another day, maybe, huh? So let's recap the moves the Flames did make. On the 16th of March, let's back up to the beginning. On February 14th, Valentine's Day, we got a sweetheart of a deal. Tyler Toffoli heads to the Calgary Flames from the Montreal Canadiens for a first-round pick in 2022, a fifth-round pick in 2022, Tyler Pitlick, and Emil Heminen, a prospect that we received in the Sam Bennett deal. Then that McNevin trade went down on March 2nd. That's already been washed as that's moved out. And then on March 16th, the Flames acquire Cali Yarncruck from the Seattle Kraken for a second round 2022, the pick we got for Sam Bennett last year at deadline, a third round pick in 2023, and a seventh round pick in 2024. There it is, guys. We got our roster. Our roster is set, and we're ready to roll. I feel comfortable with this roster. I like this roster. I thought deadline day went really smooth, or deadline leading up to it went smooth for the Flames. Their pre-deadline moves were bang on. And in most cases, we didn't make that hasty move at the end. And I like this roster. I think it's good. Do I think it's flawless? No, but I look at every other roster in the National Hockey League. I don't think it's flawless there either. This team is a good hockey team. We need to be proud of this team, and we need to do everything we can to give them the support down the stretch, because this is going to be one hell of a playoff run in Calgary. Joining Flames Unfiltered now, he is a regular on the show. Nate Thomas joins us. Good to have you back, Nate.
Thanks for having me on again.
Oh yeah,
last time we didn't talk about Gaudreau's contract, so we didn't butt heads and have the possibility of me not coming back.
We always on the show. It's always like, am I coming back? Yeah, you're coming back. I get you on the show because we have two different takes on the Calgary Flames.
Yeah,
but we get along about it.
Good.
You got to bust each other's chops a little bit, right?
Oh yeah, exactly. That's how you know we're buds, right?
That's so, right.
Yeah, no, I always love whenever you reach out to me and like, hey, you want to come on? And I'm like, absolutely, I do. So.
Well, I figured trade deadline is a fairly important, and I always want to know. Like, I wonder what I was. I'll be on kind of Twitter. I'll be like, I wonder what Nate's thinking tonight about this deal. I wonder what he thinks about this. So I don't know. It's good to always have you on the show. We always have fun conversations. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much again for having me.
Quiet deadline day for the Flames. Yeah. I was expecting that. Now, were you?
A little bit. I don't know. I wasn't really expecting a big splash or anything like that. Yeah, I was definitely expecting a bit of a quieter day. And I think I was a little bit more nervous, I think, for the press conference with Brad after, because I think that would have told us, if something was supposed to potentially happen or not. But it was almost a cliche for Brad at this point of, we tried to go do this, but the price wasn't right or something like that. That's what we've been hearing lots now over the last, what, 8 or 9 years that he's been the GM of the Calgary Flames. But it was so refreshing to hear this time that just they did their shopping earlier, and that day was just about trying to find a depth piece, which is exactly what they did. So,
you know, I listened to his press conference right after too, because I always do. That's probably as entertaining as the whole day is. Not as entertaining as the Daryl Sutter press conference, but entertaining.
Very true.
But you know, I like the fact that, and I know Treliving gets ripped a lot, and I kind of go to bat for him a lot. We made our moves, so I don't know what the fans expected. I mean, he got out ahead of it, which I think is, you make way more rational decisions. And so far, one we know for sure is paying off. The Yarncrack, we'll see as it goes here, but I would project it would. But, I mean, I looked at the cap yesterday, and I was up bright and early, computer going, raring to go, and I'm like looking, and I'm seeing the returns on players. And I watched it over the weekend, too, and I'm like, we're not going to get a depth guy that is gonna have an impact, because the price tags are just stupid right now.
Yeah, some of them were pretty crazy. As you know, right? I do the Quack Report covering the Anaheim Ducks on the Hockey Podcast Network, and I was kind of laughing when it made sense because he was a UFA, but I was kind of laughing when I saw that I was like, oh, Nick Deloria got picked up by Minnesota for a third round pick. And then I was more making the joke of, well, it wasn't the first round that they almost got from Pittsburgh the year before, but that's still a lot for a guy that plays in the fourth line who's mainly out there just to tear guys' heads off kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, there's, it definitely kind of set a price point, because that was early in the day, right? It was that Nick Deloria deal. So,
We didn't have a lot of picks to give up. We didn't have a lot of picks to give up. So I was like, you know, I just looked at I knew we weren't going to move a roster player. Yeah. And so I did. I don't know why. And I was hoping part of this happened, but I wasn't even going to bring this up because this is not probably one of my finer moments. But I had a stupid gut feeling when DeBrusk signed for 2 years. I'm just like, oh no.
That he was coming to Calgary?
We're not going to dish Monahan off along with a prospect, which I would be all for that. But I don't want DeBrusk for 2 more years. I'm not against Jake DeBrusk. I'm like, we can't afford another $4 million on our hit if we're going to sign Tkachuk, Jillington, Gaudreau. The list goes on and on. And yeah, I don't know why when I saw that, I'm just like, uh-oh.
Yeah, I think for Boston and Jake DeBrusk specifically, it's, you know, DeBrusk did ask for that trade, right? Which it hasn't obviously happened, but I think it's maybe a little bit easier now to trade him, and Boston can't get a better return, right? That's kind of the mentality going into that there. I still wouldn't hate it, if not for obviously the playoffs or anything like that, when we're past trade deadline anyway. But say in the summer, if, you know, it's only for 2 years, Boston may even still retain on somebody like that, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe there is some retention. I'm not saying specifically to Calgary, but just to anywhere, right? There's a little bit of retention on that. Maybe, it's a $4 million contract.
Which is not
even like
horrible.
$1 million off of it, right? That still helps some team somewhere, right?
And he's been good.
Boston return, and yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's been good. I mean, he's worth $4 million, so I can't even say that. I don't know. I'm a big Sean Monahan fan, but I'm also a realist in that I can tell he's not playing well. And
yeah, just he's at a step right now.
Yeah, and so I want to win a Stanley Cup this year, and I don't think it's because we have Sean Monahan on our roster. I don't think that. But I'm looking at his salary, and I'm like, okay, that's money we need for this summer, really bad. And something came to me today, and I wanted to bump this idea off you.
Okay.
We've been talking, and obviously we're not doctors, and a lot of the people that are talking that we're hearing aren't doctors either, but we keep hearing Sean Monahan's not healed. He's not healed. He's still not healed. It's his hip. He's still not healed. His back's bad. We hear this over and over and over.
Yeah.
Is this something that could qualify for LTIR? I know that's far-fetched. I know that's out there. But is it really, though?
Oh.
We had Hosa's skin disease. I mean, when you really dive down, he's coming off major surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
Is there justification for this? And I'm thinking back to a lot of the other LTIRs we saw. I mean, I'm not saying that players are faking it, but yeah. I don't trust some teams in pushing the envelope, if that makes sense.
I totally get what you mean. yeah, gee, okay. I think you got me stumped here on this one, honestly.
It came to me this afternoon, and I'm like, all right, I'm putting this on my notes because I just thought of it, and I'm like, why would he not meet the criteria any more than another player?
I feel like it's because it's still playable, right?
He's still
able to produce and that sort of thing. Obviously, not to the point that
Weber was playable through the Stanley Cup Finals last year.
Yeah, but so is every other guy because they're trying to go for the cup, right? We hear how many stories come out after of, oh yeah, this guy was playing with a broken rib cage or something, right?
We've heard
hockey players are ridiculous.
Yeah,
they are absolutely ridiculous, and they will play through whatever, right? Just because the goal is the cup. So even from my young self and playing lacrosse and everything like that, yeah, there's definitely times I should have maybe taken a seat or that sort of thing. And I mean, we talk about Monahan. I got a hip thing too that has bugged me long after it's been technically healed or anything like that. So
I don't know.
I think it's a little bit different for a guy, say like Shea Weber, though, who's like, that was his, I guess, his second time because he did it with Nashville as well. And he was traded at that point.
I'm just using him for an example, you know.
Yeah, but he's near the end of his career. He's just trying to get it, so he's going to push through as much as he can, kind of thing. So I see kind of where you're coming from, but I don't know. I feel like for a guy like Monahan, who I'm just taking a look, yeah, he's only 27, right? That's, I don't know. I don't think that's maybe something he would want to do.
No, and I'm not,
I'm almost, yeah.
But okay, so we have another year of him.
Yeah.
This is coming from, I can't believe I'm saying this because I'm like one of his biggest fans. But you brought up a question there. It's not like he's at his end of his career. Is he? Is he?
Oh.
Is he?
See, now, I would say no. I think until I see him with another team for a little bit.
I agree, but the price tag is going to be $1.5 million.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's bad, and I'm not saying Sean Monahan's going to be like, I'm not playing for that. I'm not saying that at all. But if somebody signs him in $1.5 million to a one-year deal, a try-me offer, and is he done? I don't know. When we're going down a road, we should probably go down in the offseason. But I don't know. It just came to me today. The LTIR thing came to me today, and I'm like, that maybe isn't as far-fetched as when I first popped into my head, I thought. So I thought that's ridiculous talk, but I don't know. Maybe it's not.
Yeah, I don't think it's actually that crazy either. It's just trying to figure out, like, is that what he would even consider or
probably
anything
not.
Like that or any team would consider realistically.
Yeah. Okay, let's shift gears. Let's get back to deadline. That's really right. Why we're here. So we end up losing Brad Richardson on waivers yesterday. And then fill that spot with Ryan Carpenter from the Chicago Blackhawks. First, your take on losing Richardson?
He was a good guy for the bottom six and, that bottom line especially. But it feels more like a locker room loss than it does a maybe on-ice production loss.
Yeah.
And I guess kind of leading into who he was replaced by, I got to shout out a buddy of mine here, Shaden Stevenson, who works for Flames Nation, because honestly, I didn't know a whole lot about Carpenter or that. And
I don't either.
Yeah. So he had a great article actually come out today. I'll kind of give you the SparkNotes version of it pretty much, but it explained to me kind of what works. So Carpenter is a good replacement. He's a bottom line guy that could be used for a third line if needed. Definitely more defensive than he is offensive. Kind of how Shane described it of like, is if you get any offensive production out of him, that's a bonus at this point.
Okay.
And kind of more of a replacement for a guy like what Pitlick was supposed to be, who was a bit more of a defensive-minded forward that could let the offensive guys really just go for it. So, yeah, it's kind of the Spark Notes version of it. Shane gets more into it in his article there. Definitely go check it out. Yeah, shout out to Shane. His Twitter handle is @flash_33 if you want to take a look at his work. He does awesome stuff.
Perfect. Yeah, I'm always in on Flames Nation stuff, so that's always good stuff.
Yeah, so... yeah, I think the acquisition of Carpenter, yeah, it's that depth guy that Brad was looking for on trade deadline day, right? It's like you said, he did kind of the work that he wanted to beforehand. And, yeah, like we were kind of talking about or alluding to early on, Tyler Toffoli is looking phenomenal with this Flames team. And it makes me happy, even though it's not just a rental for him, right? We have him for another 2 years.
I'm really impressed, too.
Yeah. And even a guy like Cal Yarncroke as well, who just kind of helps round out that third line a little bit, I think.
I think we talked about him when we were on the show last time together, and that was kind of a guy that I had pinpointed. And yeah. I was super happy when that deal went through because I kind of pinpointed him a month or so ago as a guy that would fill the role that we're looking for. And it's been, what, 2 games now, I think? So it's pretty tough to tell, you know. The verdict's still out, but I do have high hopes that he's gonna produce the way we need him to produce, and I feel like it's gonna be a really solid fit for this team.
Oh yeah, absolutely, I absolutely do as well. So I think a big thing that I see at least with maybe not so much Carpenter, but with the acquisitions of Toffoli and Yarncroke is the attention to chemistry. Right, you have some teams who are just trying to go out for the best guy available, and which is totally fine, obviously. But you can have a team comprised of the greatest players in the world, but if they don't mesh together, it's not going to do anything, right? Take a look at the NHL All-Stars in the 70s, whenever they played the Soviet Union, right? The Soviets just crushed them because they had a system that worked and those guys all played together. They had the chemistry. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, a bit more of a more recent example I'd like to think of is like the 2006 Canadian Olympic team. You got a roster of amazing players, but, you know, it's weird to think that Canada didn't medal, like let alone place, was even in like gold medal contention, just an Olympics after they won gold and then would go on to win gold again the next year and the year after that.
You know, it's funny how I always look at that as how is the team going to go together? And I've always heard, and we're not in the room, so we don't know, but we've heard that this room's a really tight room. And I think that kind of bleeds over in a lot of the press conferences we see and different things we hear from that. And I can kind of liken it to what we heard with the Tampa Bay Light, you know, over the last couple of years and how they would bring in players just that fit the role they need. And I think they did a really, really good job of that in Tampa Bay and are reaping the rewards of it right now. And hopefully, when you look at this Flames roster, we've kind of plugged in the holes and filled the needs that we have. We've been fortunate with no injuries this year, and hopefully we can keep that going. But
yeah, knock on wood.
Yeah. But even with injuries, you know, the big talk on deadline, too, was that we're going to bring in a depth defenseman. And I was not against that, although I did not want to mess with that upper six. How do you feel about our defense going in, you know, as it stands right now?
Honestly, pretty solid. I was hearing that rumor as well, and that was something that I didn't think we needed to really address or that sort of thing. I think I thought we kind of had the depth defenseman, right? You got guys like Michael Stone. You can bring up Valimaki if you need to, right? You have guys that have played in this roster, have shown that they can play well and can fill out that depth if you need it, because obviously in the playoffs, you know, guys get hurt and everything like that. But I think there is the depth there outside of that top six.
Well, we have Connor Mackey too. I mean, Connor Mackey's NHL ready from everybody's telling me. We have 9 guys that I feel can fit that role. And I don't know that anybody fits that role better than Michael Stone. The dude can take 26 games off and step into the lineup and look like he hasn't missed a beat. So, Like, yeah. I feel extremely comfortable. Now, I've heard, you know, many people, and I remember Brian Burke really being big on it. It's like, you need 10 for the playoffs. You need 10. Well, we have 9.
Close enough.
That's probably more than 80% of the teams in the league.
Yeah, so, exactly. And, that, and like even for Boston, that was a big thing that they touched on from last year was they just, you know, they got depleted on defense and they tried to stock up this year. So,
yeah, I feel pretty comfortable too. So we got our forward group. Well, our roster's set now. What would you do with the Lions? Where do you like the new shakeup with Lindholm, Toffoli, Gaudreau? What would if you were Daryl Sutter and you were going to get ready for this playoff run, how would you approach the lines or the goaltending or, you know, time management, I guess?
Mm-hmm. So the roster that we saw on Saturday that we're going to be seeing tonight against San Jose as well, it sounds like it's pretty similar. I hadn't really had a whole, like a big chance, honestly, to look at that top line of a Lindholm, Toffoli, Gaudreau yet. So I guess I'll be able to give you a better answer after tonight's game.
Yes.
But, I mean, on paper at least, that seems to work well, right? Toffoli and Gaudreau are both guys that, I mean, really that whole line is a line of finishers, but it's also a line of guys that can be dishers, right?
Gaudreau is as good a disher as there is.
Yeah, exactly. It's just such a, I mean, normally you hear this term for like a bottom six guy or something like that, but the whole line feels like a Swiss Army knife that anyone can fill a role for that line specifically. Yeah, and then you go to a second line of, say, like Backlund, Dubé, and Tkachuk that it has here on Daily Faceoff, and that also looks like a solid line as well. Like, really, there's not the only line I don't think I would really want to mess with a whole lot is the fourth line of Monahan, Lucic, and Lewis. But really, I feel like the top nine, you can kind of move guys up and down the lineup a little bit. You don't want to shake things up too much, but it feels like anything could really work well, actually. It feels pretty balanced throughout.
I'm going to run something by you. I like the versatility that we've seen. And I like that, I mean, me and I believe you're on my side of this. I hated it when Jeff Ward was here and we shuffled lines.
Absolutely. I hated it too.
And I think me and you vented quite frequently about that. But I do believe that we'll get back to the Lindholm, Tkachuk, Gaudreau first line because, I mean, how do you not? I believe that. I would not be – well, I shouldn't say that. What I would do if I was Daryl Sutter, though, is I would start managing minutes on a few players like a Lewis and especially a Lucic.
I do agree with that. However, Daryl Sutter is known to just roll the four lines. I don't think we're
Lucic's play has been going like this over the last month. And he's not a small guy. He's a big guy. And he's not a young guy. And I just look at, like, he's going to be critical in the playoffs for that presence. And I feel like the trajectory of him is going the wrong way. And I don't know if that would help or not, but I just look at managing some of those guys' minutes. This is another thing I wanted to get your take on is I've been really impressed with Adam Ruziczka, and I hate to see him balance Stockton. I get it. I get it. But where do you go with that? What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, man. Easily one of the black aces, I think, come playoff time. But then again, maybe you do want him because Stockton's doing really well down in the AHL. They're looking for a Calder Cup even this year too, which is really cool actually to have both, you know, the parent club and the younger club both trying to go for championships at the same time. But yeah, he could definitely be a black ace even if it's after, you know, the Stockton run or anything like that. But he's a guy that'd be able to slot back in there. Besides that though. Like, unless you absolutely need him or need to have, like, a small shakeup in your bottom six, I think, you give him the chance next year, I think. Well, that I don't want to see – or that I wasn't upset or that when he was sent down. He was playing phenomenally, and there was a lot of people who were saying, you know, it would be like a Richardson or a Richie before that kind of thing of, like, send them down instead. But yeah,
that had waivers involved and – I understand why they sent him down. I do think he's going to be an integral part of the team next year. I really do believe that.
Yeah.
Is there a player in the forward group that you're not happy with right now?
I feel like the only guy would be Monahan, honestly, just really? Because it's you. I mean, look back a couple of years ago, right, where you had the you know, like the purple Gatorade and everything like that.
He
you guys
could
are
score 30
you know,
like with his eye closed.
Yeah, they're all putting up like career points and stuff like that. If you would have told me the 2 years ago that Sean Monahan is going to be playing on the fourth line and not being able to hit the broadside of a barn from point blank, I would have laughed at you.
Yeah.
But that's really only the only guy that I can really be, I think, upset with for that forward group. Everybody else is pulling their weight, and yeah.
I got a guy, you got to talk me off the cliff on this one.
Okay, I'll try.
Okay. I got a guy that I'm frustrated with, and I don't know why. Oh, I do know why, just because I watch him. And maybe I'm crazy in the fact that my expectations were higher, but explain to me why I shouldn't be upset with Dylan Dubé.
Oh, man. I think because I'm trying to think of how to word this. We were just talking earlier about how everybody has a specific role for this team.
Uh-huh.
I think Daryl Sutter has found a role that maybe wasn't the original idea of what Dylan Dubé would be, could be. And I think it's just there's a few guys that, you know, they enter the NHL thinking, or with other people thinking, that they're going to be one thing. But eventually they, you know, that maybe doesn't work. They try something else, and that's how they succeed in the league. I think a great example of that is a guy like Brent Burns, who was originally drafted as a right winger and, you know, made the transition to defense, and the guy's been phenomenal. That's not to say that Dylan Dubé can't be what everyone originally thought of him and that we saw for the first little while. But I think just with this iteration of Daryl Sutter's Calgary Flames, with the guys that we have on and that sort of thing, Dubé is right where Sutter wants him. I haven't really heard a whole lot of complaints out of Sutter or any other management about Dubé specifically. So
the only thing I've heard on Sutter say, and he said it last week late last week, he said if he's not moving his feet, he's not in the play, which is true about every player, but and then he's not a factor every night. And he says the nights that he's clicking, he's a factor because he's in on the plays and he's around the puck. I don't know what my expectations were. I'm not unrealistic in our prospects. I thought that he, to me, seems not as strong on the puck as he should be at year three.
It could maybe even be those same expectations on himself, right? Of this is the player that's like, just think kind of thinking like what he would think of, like, this is the player I thought I was supposed to be and whatnot. And it's just, sometimes you even have to just have the confidence instilled in you of, we need you to do this and you can do this, right? Like it's kind of the team over the individual thing in a way. So
well, kind of like Michael Backlund. I mean, a lot of people used to complain and bitch because Michael Backlund wasn't scoring. And I'm like, if Michael Backlund scores every three or four games, I'm happy. Like Backlund's job is, and he's so damn good at it. And the guys that rip Backlund, I just shake my head because I'm like, well, you're not watching the complete game. I don't know. And maybe, I mean, who am I to tell somebody else how to watch the game, I guess. But I just, I mean, you're not going to have every guy who's going to be a 30-goal scorer. And
no.
You know,
yeah. You literally can't afford that.
No, you can't.
No team can.
And we may find that out sooner than later.
Yeah.
Because we have a ton of them up in that category. So let's switch gears just a little bit. One more thing on deadline day. And the reason I bring this up is because it affects the Pacific Division. And secondly, I bring it up because you host the Quack Report on the Hockey Podcast Network.
I feel like I know where you're going with this.
I want to know what the hell's going on with this trade in Anaheim. And you know more than I know because I'm confused.
So I was listening into the Jeff Merrick show today, and Elliot Friedman had the best kind of explanation as to what's going on so far. And it's – oh, man, I'm not even trying to remember exactly how it went. So it sounds like that Dadonov – this goes back to his time in Ottawa. from last season, he had to file a 10-team no trade list, and that was filed in on time, but that would continue on through, you know, this year, obviously, and with Vegas. But so I guess Vegas apparently didn't know that Anaheim was on his 10-team no trade.
How do you know that?
And that was something that Elliot Friedman had brought up too, of, you know, you would think that would be something with, like, you know, Central Registry or something like that, which it probably will be now after this whole thing.
Shouldn't it be, you know, I had to laugh, and I'm gonna interrupt you for 1 second, and then I want to hear the rest of the story, but I had to laugh yesterday during the trade talk or whatever. They said, well, it has to be emailed in or faxed in, and I'm thinking, holy shit. Like, what year are we in here? I mean, isn't there like a computer program where it's like freaking Cap Friendly? Some guy, I mean, they're amazing. I love Cap Friendly. I'm not knocking them by saying this, but they do that out of their house.
Yeah.
Like, that's done out of his house. He knew that trade couldn't happen.
Yeah.
And Central Registry, it should be like ordering a pizza. It's like, oh, you can't put that on there. You know what I mean? Like, to get the special, so, you can't put that, you know, it should have kicked him out of the trade. But
so what it sounds like is that it would, in a way, kind of be a bit more on, I could have this wrong, but just kind of from what I'm remembering, it could be a little bit more on the, like, on Dadonov and his agent which it sounds like they did eventually, right? Of like, hey, this shouldn't be happening, but I'm hoping I'm remembering this correctly. It was filed with Ottawa, but it wasn't given to Vegas or something like that. I don't know. But that 10-team no trade list didn't have to go to Vegas in time for the deadline. It was to Ottawa back in July, which carries through. So, but there was a good question kind of brought up. I forget who it was by. They're like, man, if you're Dadonov in this, you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. You have either, you know, you go to a team that you didn't want to go to, or you go back to a team that just tried to get rid of you.
I know, but I'd stay in Vegas because I'd be like, suck it. I'm sick of Vegas. I mean, they are like the freaking bullies of the NHL. Like,
there was something I was talking with Carter, my co-host. I think we were talking about it off air. That for a split, like for a while there, I did the Blasty Cast with Noah Adler as well, another Flames show. And something I had brought up when we were talking about Vegas, that I originally got blasted on social media when we had posted that clip. And now it's kind of become, you know, what a lot of people are thinking. And so I'm just like, oh, okay, well, so I wasn't far off then. That, you know, it's this relentless pursuit of the Stanley Cup for Vegas, that it doesn't matter who you are. There's no loyalty in Vegas.
There is none
whatsoever. So, like, maybe except from, you know, Bill Foley, the actual owner. But when it comes to the front office, they don't care as long as they get owner of the Stanley Cup.
I don't even know if there is from Bill Foley. And I actually had the privilege to meet him. He's a very nice guy. But, like, this team is just hell-bent on winning the Cup. And I respect the hell out of that. But, like, along the way, you can't screw over a bunch of players to where agents are telling people, don't go sign in Vegas, there's no loyalty. Like,
you can either pick your money, which Vegas will gladly give you, but you're not guaranteed to stay there longer than 3 years. So, and I'd like to think that Bill Foley, the owner of the Vegas Golden Knights, has the loyalty, at least for himself, considering the story that came out of him telling Marc-Andre Fleury that, you know, he was going to retire a Golden Knight, that they would set him up after and everything like that. And then just a couple weeks later, the front office doesn't tell him that he got traded, and he found out through Twitter. Uh-huh. So, which that was also entertaining to see after the fact, that, you know, you had Alan Walsh, Marc-Andre Fleury's agent, coming out on Twitter saying, you know, Chicago treated Marc-Andre and his family very nicely and kept him in the loop of the whole process of being traded to Minnesota and everything like that, and allowed him to, you know, to pick that's where he wanted. Obviously, he had a no trade clause and he had to waive it, so he did have some choice in the matter, but they fully kept him in the loop the entire time.
And that's so, and that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's,
he was so different compared to Vegas, I'm sure. So
kudos to the Blackhawks on that, even though I don't like Alan Walsh, but that's another story. It goes back to the Frolik days.
Yeah, fair enough.
You remember that madness? Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Couple questions here, and I will let you pour a cold one and sit back and watch the Flame Sharks. But
sounds good.
All right. This is our roster. This is our lineup. This is what we're going to the playoffs with. This team, to me, reminds me of teams, do I dare say, 86, 89, teams where I was like, yeah, this team's for real. How comfortable do you feel with this lineup heading into the Stanley Cup playoffs?
This is the most, I mean, I'm, in the grand scheme of things, I'm pretty young at only 25, but this is the most comfortable I have ever felt with a roster for the Calgary Flames. And I mean, I even went to playoff games in 2015. I had high hopes for 2019, but you look at you, I remember looking at that roster and being like, oh, you know, we could have maybe done this or that sort of thing.
We're better than that roster, aren't we?
Oh, 100%. Because okay. I look at this roster and I go, that is a solid roster, top to bottom. Whether you're a first line guy, you're a fourth line guy, you're a backup goaltender, you're a black ace, right? There is depth throughout this. Everybody has a role. Everybody can contribute in their own way. And everybody has been. It's shown throughout the season. So, I'm very confident in this. I'm trying not to be too confident.
No, I am too. I'm trying to be realistic. But yeah. That's why, like, sometimes I'm like, okay, am I seeing this from a perspective that's idiotic? Like, I gotta validate what I'm seeing here by another logical Flames fan. And it's like, I have my friends all the time, they'll be that are not Flames fans, they'll be like, well, what do you think? You think Flames are going to go all the way this year? I'm like, I don't know, we're just trying to get to the playoffs. I pull the old Daryl Sutter card out. Like I don't want to say anything because I don't want to jinx this. Like, things are going that well.
See, and that's the same thing for me, too, is like, I'm looking outside of any Flames fans or insiders or anything like that. I'm looking towards, you know, Oilers fans or Leafs fans or anything like that of like, what do you guys think of this team if you've paid like any attention to them. And fortunately it's been a lot of, they look deep.
Yeah.
Like they look like they'll go deep. So,
yeah. One last question. What teams in the West scare you?
I think it's hard not to, or it's hard to ignore Colorado, obviously. And even with the moves that, I don't know. I feel like Minnesota doesn't get enough recognition.
Actually. I agree.
I'm not trying to be a fanboy. You know me. I love my Marc-Andre Fleury and everything like that. But I look at the goaltending tandem of Cam Talbot and Marc-Andre Fleury. That feels deadly to me.
Very good.
You know, you still have Kirill Kaprizov. Jared Spurgeon on that back end there is doing pretty well since coming back from a very long injury and everything like that. We talked about Nick Deslauriers earlier, which there was another great tweet that I saw, and I forget who it was. They're talking about, like, imagine being Kirill Kaprizov. You can go out and score, you know, a guarantee 40. You could probably go, you know, take someone's kneecap out with your stick or that. And it doesn't matter because you have Nick Deslauriers salivating on the bench, ready to kill anybody that touches you.
Yeah. There you go.
So, I think that, that Minnesota could be, they're just not a team that I don't think a lot of people are really paying attention to, even though they're, you know, they're second in the Central.
Yeah. So. No, I would agree with both of those. Do you fear the Edmonton Oilers, or are we too scared to talk about that?
I'm actually, oh man. You know what? Screw it. If I get blasted for it, whatever. I'm not really actually. Awesome. The offense is scary, obviously, to a point. It's always going to be if you have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. But I feel like the game that the Oilers played the other night against the Colorado Avalanche show that all you have to do is take space away from them.
Yeah.
And you got a solid chance. I was kind of laughing seeing Ken Holland's comments of, I'm confident in our goaltenders because I know nobody else is.
He has to keep saying that to himself.
Yeah, pretty much. That's all he has to do. So, but, I mean, like, there is a very quick fix for the Edmonton Oilers in the goaltending department. It's down in Bakersfield. His name is Stuart Skinner.
Yeah.
It's honestly, that honestly is the fix, but I mean, I'm sure we'll see that probably next year from the Oilers with Koskinen's deal just finally being done, I think, this year. So
I'm not as ballsy as you. I am on a lot of things about this one. I'm not. I thought Edmonton looked really good last night against Colorado. I do feel like they've gotten deeper. I don't trust their back end. I think Nurse is highly overrated. And I watched their goaltending last night, and I thought Smith looked fine. But I also know enough about Smith and Koskinen to know that if the wind blows the wrong direction tomorrow, they can be really, really, really bad too.
Yeah, exactly. It's either you're going to have an MVP caliber game out of Mike Smith, you're going to have a above average game out of Mikko Koskinen, or you're going to have the equivalent of a Timbit goalie sitting in net. So
it is that different of a level, and I don't know. My gut tells me we're going to get Edmonton in the playoffs at some point. May not be the first round.
Yeah, I could see a second round matchup maybe.
I could too. And that's crazy.
It is exciting to think about.
That's giving them credit that they're going to make it to the second round.
Yeah, true.
Their fans.
They would currently be matched up against the LA Kings, who.
Yeah.
That was another kind of look that I got. I remember at the start of the season of, you know, like I was saying that the Kings could at least potentially make the playoffs. I thought that the rebuild was turning around quickly, and I had a few looks of like, are you sure about that? Like, but you know, not to toot my own horn, but yeah, now they're sitting second in the division. So.
Yeah. No, you're right. And you know what? If I'm Edmonton, though, I like that matchup.
Yeah, I do too.
I like that matchup. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be very, very, very interesting. And this stretch run through to the playoffs is going to be great. We're going to have a lot more to talk about as we get closer to puck for the Stanley Cup playoffs. But I do appreciate you joining the show. Make sure you go onto the Hockey Podcast Network. Check out the Quack Report. Nate does a great, great job with that show. And, he's all over Flames Twitter, too. He's always making me chuckle. And I'm sure he'll have a few good ones tonight during the Flames Sharks game that we're going to go enjoy.
Absolutely. I'll do my best to make you laugh at least once tonight.
All righty. Thanks for joining me, Nate.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
All right, Flames fans, time for a little bit of Flames and news. And I was listening to the Jeff Merrick show this week, and Elliot Friedman got me a little bit worried and a little bit scared when he was talking about the extension that Tomas Hertl signed in San Jose, an 8-year deal, over $8 million. And I'm sitting there, and he says, if you're Johnny Gaudreau, if you're Philip Forsberg, if you're Nazem Kadri, if you're JT Miller, you're looking at this contract now, and you're saying, okay, there's the new standard. The price tag is going to be high. It's going to be very, very high. Other news, Lucic got hit in the head the other night with a puck in warm-ups and was kind of questionable if that was going to happen. What's your guys' thought? Should players wear helmets in warm-ups or not? Lucic never does. A lot of Flames don't, actually. I don't know. I remember, was it Ryan Nugent Hopkins? Or no, it was Taylor Hall when he was in Calgary. When he's in Edmonton, he got hurt pretty bad in warm-ups when he didn't have a helmet on. And I don't know. It just got me thinking again. Did you know the Flames' consecutive losses? Hasn't happened too much. They haven't lost consecutively in the last 2 months, going back to January 13th. They're 21-6-2 in the last 29 games. No consecutive losses. Let's not start that on Friday night, right? Stockton Heat, boy, this team's good. First team to clinch a playoff spot in the American Hockey League. They were rocking and rolling last Saturday night. The Heat beat Colorado 10-3. Phillips, Peltier, Ruziska, Zari, all with multi-point games. Whew, gotta love to see that. Player of the week, Jacob Peltier, 4 games played, 5 goals, 2 assists. The guy's on fire. Other good news for prospects, Coronado, 2 points, including the OT winner, to get Harvard into their championship game, which they end up winning. The freshman has, I believe, 35 points now, as they head to the NCAA regionals, which start Thursday, I think. Yeah, they start tomorrow. Whew. That's coming quick. I'll check the schedule. I might have to watch a game tomorrow night. Is that that gets going? Or maybe it's Friday. I think it's Friday. I don't know. I'll have to check. I should probably know that, right? I should put that in my notes. I wasn't planning on talking about that, but I guess I did. Tonight's been a gong show. I got to get this video equipment figured out. All right. Standings in the division. Let's talk about it. Calgary still leads the division 84 points in 63 games. They are 8 points up on the Los Angeles Kings, who sit at 76 points. Calgary 6-3-1 in their last 10. LA 5-4-1. Edmonton, who's been on a roll lately, 5-3-2 in their last games, 75 points. They are 9 back of the Flames. They've played, both them and LA have played one more game than Calgary. Vegas out of the playoffs as we speak right now. That's mind-boggling. 72 points in 66 games. They played 3 more games than the Flames, and 3-7-0 in their last 10. Vancouver on the outside, I don't think they're getting back in. They are playing Colorado tonight. They currently sit at 68 points. Anaheim is at 65-6, San Jose 64-7, and Seattle bringing up the rear, 44 points in 8th place. Let's talk about the other moves for teams that are relevant in the playoffs in the Pacific. And let's talk about the Los Angeles Kings first. Couple minor deals. They acquired Nelson Nagar from Winnipeg for Marcus Phillips, irrelevant. They acquired Frederick Allard from the Nashville Predators for Braden Burke. And they're probably their most significant move was Troy Stetcher. Acquired him from the Detroit Red Wings for a 7th-round pick in 2022. Stetcher, a small in stature defenseman, but works hard, effective, moves the puck well, and for a little guy, creates a lot of havoc in front of the net, moving guys out. Edmonton Oilers, this is interesting. Not the moves we expected. They started off with getting Brett Kulak from Montreal for William Legason, a conditional 2nd-round pick in 2022 and a 7th-round pick in 2024. Boy, you'd swear with Twitter that they got Bobby Orr, but it's not. It's Brett Kulak. And that's the same Brett Kulak we lost on waivers a few years ago. And I know a lot of people in Calgary were hoping maybe we could land Kulak at deadline. And I wasn't against that either. I've always kind of liked his play. I didn't think when he got put on waivers that anybody in the organization wanted to lose him. But heading out wasn't the cleanest deal. So I kind of thought maybe he wouldn't be coming back to Calgary. One other move from the Edmonton Oilers towards the end of the day, Derek Brassard was acquired from the Philadelphia Flyers for a 4th-round pick in 2023. Again, no major moves for the Edmonton Oilers, much like the Kings. The last move, the Vegas Golden Knights. This move just got nixed today. Oh, huge controversies. Evgeny Dadonov was supposed to be getting traded from Vegas to Anaheim, along with a conditional 2nd-round pick in 2023-24. John Moore and Ryan Kessler's contract were heading to the Golden Knights. The problem there lies that Evgeny Dadonov did not have Anaheim on his 10-team trade list. How that didn't get caught at Central Registry right away is beyond me. How this took 2 days to get figured out is even more beyond me. Anyways, Vegas doesn't get their way. They don't get the cap space. They so drastically need to get Mark Stone back into the lineup. I don't know what the hell's going to happen in Vegas right now. They're in a full tailspin. I don't know. The trade gets nixed. Doesn't happen. Vegas gets nobody on trade deadline. Whew. But we in the Pacific did that much. Out east, they did a lot. Colorado did some things. They got better in the Central. Minnesota. Pacific really didn't do a whole lot. Interesting, huh? Yeah. Listener question comes from Mitch Haig, Airdrie, Alberta. I really appreciate the question. I like it. He fired it over to me about a half hour ago. How do you handle the starting goalies for this weekend's games? Well, let's talk about that quick. We got Arizona Friday night. We got Edmonton Saturday night. Both of them in Calgary. And we got Colorado on Tuesday. I think I personally, I know people are going to think I'm crazy. And I'm a Vladar fan, and I want Vladar to play a lot. But just the way things went down the other night, I want Markstrom kicking in high gear. I'd go Markstrom all three. Barring something crazy happening and me changing my mind for the Edmonton game, I would for sure have him against Colorado, and which he hasn't played against Colorado this year. That's an interesting fact. And maybe Sutter doesn't want him to play against Colorado, so that we, if that's a destined matchup in the Western Conference Finals, which would be wonderful, and I hope that's not a pipe dream that I'm saying that. I don't know. That sounds like a Sutter mind game, doesn't it? I'd go Markstrom all three. I know that's not by popular belief because we need to get Markstrom rest. I think this is an important weekend. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in the game previews.
Get all your Flames Unfiltered podcasts, team news, team updates, and highlights at flamesunfiltered.com.
All right, big week for the Flames. Arizona comes out. We played Wednesday night, or Tuesday night. We had Wednesday off, Thursday off. Get some rest. This team seems like they're playing every other night, sometimes more. Last week was a gong show. The week before that was a gong show. This week we can breathe a little easier. Now, we're not coming off some stellar games here lately. So it's time to get back on track. Arizona, who's eighth, the worst team in the Central Division with 44 points, comes into town Friday night. Second of three meetings, we won the first one 4-2 in Arizona on February 2nd. Then we meet again in Calgary on April 16th for the final meeting. Important game. Important game. It's time to get right the ship, get rolling again, playing the system that Calgary plays so well. Things don't get easier. A back-to-back seems like we always get Edmonton on a back-to-back, doesn't it? It seems like it always goes that way. Those hated Oilers head to town for a Hockey Night in Canada matchup on Saturday night. Edmonton, really good lately. Did lose in overtime to Colorado last night, but they were really good. I have to give them credit. They were very, very good. Third in the Pacific at 75 points. This team has been okay lately. It's actually been a pretty good team since we played them. This is the final of four meetings. Meeting one went Edmonton 4-2. Meeting two went Edmonton 5-3. Both those were in Edmonton. Calgary did come back, got that monkey off their back a few weeks ago, beat Edmonton 3-1 in Calgary. I think it's important mentally because somebody, my gut tells me somehow we're going to meet this team in the playoffs. Not in the first round, maybe the second round. And I'd like to have some wins under our belt with them and some confidence being able to shut down Draisaitl and McDavid, which we did very, very good last game. Tuesday night, it doesn't get any easier. Is that top team in the Western Conference, first place in the Central with 95 points. Colorado Avalanche come into Calgary. Third of four meetings. Calgary wins the first one, 4-3 in Colorado in overtime. Colorado came back about a week ago now and beat the Flames 3-0 in Colorado. This is the final of three meetings. This team is high-powered. This team is damn, damn good. Every time I watch them, I shake my head and say, how are we going to stop McKinnon? How are we going to stop McKinnon? It's going to be interesting. That is definitely, definitely, definitely going to be interesting. Thank you all for bearing with my video problems tonight and some of the video problems I've had in the last few episodes. And I do apologize for that. Last thing I want is problems. I've got about $500 worth of equipment sitting next to me here that I hope rectifies that problem. Tomorrow, we'll get that all fixed. Now, how do you feel, Flames fans? Are we ready to go? Is this roster ready? I think it is. Next week, we're going to break those lines down a little bit more and talk about what I would do if I was putting together the lines and how I see it working down with rest as we go down the stretch. Check out flamesunfiltered.com. Thanks to all of our listeners. We truly appreciate it. We do. Thanks for all the follows on Facebook and on YouTube and everybody checking everything out. And hit us up on social media. We love chatting Flames hockey. Have a good week, guys. Enjoy this weekend's Flames action as we got a late night Battle of Alberta Saturday night. That's always fun in Calgary, isn't it?
Get connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. And also make sure you check out our Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Check out host Brad Brood on Twitter at Brad Brood. And if you like what you hear, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find Flames Unfiltered on all the major podcast players. Thanks again and enjoy the hockey action.
Playoff! Yeah, baby! Playoff! Yeah, baby!
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk. This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.